The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Inside the Huddle, Homecoming Edition. We're previewing Indiana's homecoming matchup against the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. It is a must-win game for the Indiana Hoosiers as they head into this one 4-2, looking to get to 5-2 heading into Michigan State next week. We welcome in our co-host TJ Inman. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing great, Sammy. As always, it's a pleasure to be talking football. I am ready to go.
Good. Yeah, we're going to break down Rutgers and Indiana. It's a homecoming matchup. Nick sent us a text this morning, which is hard to believe, that Indiana in Kevin Wilson's era is 0-4 on homecoming games. I think two of them came against Michigan State. I think Minnesota debacle was a homecoming matchup a couple years ago. And I don't really remember what was the homecoming game for the first year, but they're 0-4. And this one this week is a must win.
Yeah, it's a very, very large game. And we'll talk about maybe the stakes of it later. I know that Matt Weaver's going to be on. That's a great time to talk to him about that. I worry about placing stakes on it that maybe are too big, but I don't think we can overstate it if you look at the future schedule, I guess you could say, because after this they go to East Lansing. They will be heavy underdogs in that game. Michigan State has not played particularly well this season, but still, that's going to be a very tall task to win that one. After that, you have an off week, and then you're taking on the Michigan Wolverines. You really have to look towards, and then you have Iowa.
Iowa, then Michigan.
Okay, so Iowa and then Michigan.
Them.
So you've got to look towards those final 2 weeks of the season as your last kind of realistic chance to get wins 5-6, and there'd just be, immense pressure on a road game at Maryland, and then a road game against Purdue. Two games that you could win. You don't want to leave it to where your goal is getting to that bowl game. You don't want to leave it where you have to win back-to-back road games to accomplish that. So, this is definitely a huge game, not only for this season, but really for the overall direction of the program. You lose on Saturday, and you really feel like all of the juice from that 4-0 start is gone. You can't – I don't think that anything has happened in these last 2 weeks that should have people – saying, wow, things are falling apart, because, you had a disappointing performance against Penn State, but it was understandable. It's a game at Penn State. It's a game where you suffered a lot of injuries. You had a couple things go wrong early in that game that if they'd gone differently, you never know what could happen. Penn State clearly played better than IU. They deserved the victory, no doubt about that. But I don't think there was anything there that you would say was terribly disappointing from Indiana's point of view. It was just injuries that you don't really have any control over. In the Ohio State game, you're disappointed you lose that, but you can't be anything but encouraged by that performance. So I don't think anything has happened in these last 2 weeks to drastically change your outlook on the team. A loss on Saturday would do that.
Yeah, that's correct. And, the injuries, that's probably the most concerning part, is that you hope they come back. I think they have to play both Howard and Sudfeld this week if they're close to 100%. If they're sitting there at 60% and he can't protect himself, probably not. But you got to give it a shot if he's 75% or better. give it a shot on the first drive. If you see something you don't like, you could pull him. But this is a you know, Matt was saying it's the biggest game in the Kevin Wilson era, and I'm leaning towards agreeing with him. So you got to, you know, pull out all the stops and give it a shot, roll the dice with Sudfeld and Howard, because if you lose this one, TJ, you're right. Going on the road at the end of the year there against Maryland and Purdue to get two wins is very, very difficult. Even though there's two teams that are struggling, I don't think there would be anything better in the world for a Purdue football fan, aside from winning the Big Ten or winning a national championship, than to go and play spoiler at Ross 8 on that last day of the season with Indiana looking for a sixth win. So let's get into the game. What have you seen from Rutgers this year so far, TJ?
Sure. Yeah, we'll do a we'll do kind of an overview of Rutgers here, then we'll get into our keys to the game. You know, Rutgers on the season has had a couple of results that really leave you disappointed. They lost to Washington State at home, which Washington State has, you know, they've knocked off Oregon. So it's hard to say that's a terrible football team, but no, that's not a good football program. You do expect to beat them when you're on your home field. They lost that one 37-34, which is a game that they consider a rivalry game. I don't think Penn State feels the same way about it as Rutgers does, but that was a game that they were never even close to competitive in. And they've had a lot of turmoil off the field with Kyle Flood. The short of it is that he was suspended following some academic misconduct. To be honest with you, I don't really know how he still has a job. The worst of it for me, I mean, yes, he broke procedure. It sounded like, at the very least, he was attempting to kind of intimidate a faculty member into adjusting the grade of one of his players, and then he admitted to making some changes, what he called small corrections, to a player's paper before a player's paper was submitted. I mean, that is gross misconduct that should result in termination if you're supposed to be representing an academic institution. But nevertheless, Kyle Flood was suspended, and he will return for this game on Saturday, so he'll be back on the sidelines. Their best player, Leonte Carew, has also missed some games. When he has played, he's been really good. Their strength would be, I think, their skill position players. They have they've got a good stable of running backs, and then Leonte Carew is likely the best receiver in the Big Ten, one of the best in college football. He's extremely explosive. We'll talk about IU's plans for him here later on in our keys to the game, I imagine. Their defense can be considered a weakness. They play very aggressive, but they don't really hit home on that aggressiveness very often. They don't have very many sacks, and it tends to leave them exposed in coverage. They have a weak secondary. I think it's somewhere in the 100s as far as pass defense goes, 111th or something like that. They've given up a ton of passing yards. This is a game that just on face value, it kind of seems like both teams will expect to put up some points, particularly if Indiana has Nate Sudfeld. You know, Chris Laviano is the quarterback. He does not have a huge arm, but so far he's been pretty effective, particularly when Leonte Carew is available. He's by far their biggest weapon on offense. They'll look to get him the ball. I think they should look to get him the ball more. The play calling to me has been a little bit interesting. Their offensive coordinator is a brother of the Patriots offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels. So that is a little bit of an interesting wrinkle, as the McDaniels family will be spending some time in Indiana this weekend on both Saturday and Sunday. But I don't think that the play calling has been very dynamic in his first year. It's been a bit predictable to me, and I don't think they've utilized Carew when he has been on the field quite enough. We'll see if that changes. Typically, they have not taken a lot of deep shots downfield, but Penn State had until last week, and they decided to get aggressive against IU's secondary, so maybe we'll see the same from Rutgers. Their running game, they've got some really good running backs, but they haven't produced quite as much as I would expect them to. Maybe that's play calling. Maybe that's the offensive line. Not entirely sure, but you know, these two teams, as far as a matchup goes, to me, it seems like a fairly straightforward, and this is assuming that Sudfeld and Howard are playing, it seems like a fairly straightforward, the skill position players on both sides are the best parts of these teams, so they should be able to produce points. I think that Indiana has a better front seven on defense than Rutgers does, and I think that that should make the difference in this game. So assuming Indiana's able to get their offense healthy and on the field, I kind of like the matchup that IU has, because I think Indiana will be able to make them a little bit one-dimensional. Peru is going to get his, but I don't think anybody else is going to be able to hurt Indiana all that much. But what did you have as your first key to the game as we get into that part of our show here?
Well, aside from me getting over a head cold, because, you know, that's important to IU's winning too. It's when I talked to the players on Monday, it was stopping the run and making them one dimensional. excuse me. So I was talking with Nick Mangieri and Zach Shaw, as you alluded to, Rutgers has, they go three or four deep at running back. So if you could stop the run early and make them throw the ball, then that pass rush could get to Laviano a little bit and maybe, Indiana's secondary can not worry about the run as much and defend Carew and cause some turnovers, because, you know, as many big plays as Indiana's given up, they've taken back a lot on turnovers. So my first key to the game is stopping the run.
Yeah, I think that's a really good key. Yeah, they've got Josh Hicks is the leader of their team for carries. He's got 69 carries on the year, almost 400 rushing yards, four touchdowns. He leads the team in all of those categories, but Robert Barton and Paul James are both averaging 5.8 yards a carry, which is more than Hicks averages per carry. Those three are kind of the main running back. Their running back carry distribution is kind of all over the place. It seems to be different each game. Josh Hicks consistently gets, I would say, a decent number, like a 10 to 15 number. Paul James kind of varies from getting anywhere from like 2 or 3 to 12 in a game. And Robert Mark appears to be kind of in the middle of all that when it breaks down eventually. It's Hicks and then Martin and then James. But we could see all three of those guys for a significant portion of the game. But if, like you said, if Indiana is able to stop that run, and I think that number, I put my primer that'll be coming out here a little bit later, I put that keeping them at something around 4 yards per carry. Indiana held Florida International to 3.7 yards a carry, Western Kentucky to 3.2, Wake Forest to 3.1. Penn State was able to get 4.8, but those mainly came with a boost from a couple of longer runs. I think for the most part, IU's run defense has been good. The key is going to be preventing those busted assignments, which appear, the players have said, it's a matter of lining up in the wrong spot or just taking one step too much to the left or the right and just being out of position. It's not being missed tackles that is doing it. If they can cut out those two or three big runs that they've allowed to Ezekiel Elliott and then to a lesser extent they allowed last week to Allen and Nick Scott, those out and not allow those big runs, I really like IU's chances to stop that, because the run defense has actually been pretty solid when they've had their full complement of defensive linemen available.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and IU's defensive line has been playing well in the last couple of days. TJ, yeah. We're going to go on to the second key of the game. My key is to keep Janarian Grant is their other big playmaker. He's a kick return guy who's played a little bit on offense. If they keep him in check on both kick returns and on offense and limit those big plays from him, IU should be good to go. Don't let Rutgers take the ball out on kickoffs to the 35 and further. Griffin Oakes has been terrific at getting touchbacks. I think he's one of the better kickers in the Big Ten, if not the nation. So we'll see. That's a matchup to watch is Griffin Oakes versus Janarian Grant.
Yes, as far as kickoffs go, Griffin Oakes has been everything you could ask for. He's doing a really good job of putting the ball in the end zone and not letting teams get their return game going. The coverage units have been really good whenever they've been asked to make a tackle on those. So I agree with you. Janarian Grant had an amazing game against Washington State, put up over 300 all-purpose yards and nearly won that game for them. And they talked about earlier in the season, they talked about trying to get him more involved and get him more touches on offense. He plays kind of wide receiver, but he doesn't really catch it all that well. He doesn't have any targets, fewer than 10 targets on the season, I believe. So they haven't really followed through with attempting to get him more involved in the offense. We'll see if that changes because he is dynamic with the ball in his hands, and if Indiana doesn't allow him to get any returns, maybe Rutgers will try to get him involved in offense with maybe some quick tunnel screens or something like that to try and get him on the outside with the ball. But he's definitely a dangerous player. Indiana's done a good job with the dynamic returners that they've faced so far. Like you said, hopefully that can continue on Saturday.
Yeah, that's definitely, you can't give them free yards. The next key to game, TJ, is catch the ball. IU's receivers have gotten, they've caught the drops used a little bit here in the last couple of games. And, you know, no matter who's the quarterback, whether it's Danny Cameron or Nate Sudfeld or Nate Boudreau or whoever else they run out there, the receiver's got to catch the ball. Damon Graham has had butterfingers and should be moved from that backup slot position. Simi Cobbs has kind of reverted back to last year's version after a strong start. He needs to get refocused and start making big plays because, you know, if you can't catch the ball, that takes away the pass as well. It doesn't matter, you know, if you have John Elway or Dan Marino back there. If your receivers can't catch the ball, your quarterback's useless.
Can you remember Cobbs getting a target last week? Because I don't remember.
Yeah, he caught one ball. It should have gone for 8 yards, but he went backwards. I think it went for 5.
Oh, yep.
But I think it was in the first half. It was buried in there, but he's a 6'4 guy. He's a matchup problem. He had a decent game against Ohio State, but he had drops in key situations. And, you know, he just can't have that.
Yeah, I think overall on the season, you'd say he's taken a step forward, but the last couple weeks have been, a little bit disappointing for him. And I think I would like to see IU target Ricky Jones early in the game. It seems like they kind of forget about him. But then one drive, he'll get like 3 or 4 targets, and then he'll go a long stretch without getting any targets again. He's been a guy that drops have not been a problem for. I'd like to see him continue to get the ball. I'd like to see Mitchell Page get involved again. And I know that Corsaro had the costly drop last week, but I still think going to the tight ends is a good idea. As often as possible. You don't want to force it, but I do think it should be a big part of the offense. And then, you know, we saw the coaches make a comment about the freshman receivers, Thornton and Westbrook, maybe being a little bit more involved here moving forward. I'd be a fan of that. They've looked good to me so far. And I, like you said, there needs to be some more production coming out of that slot position. If those guys can provide it, I'm all for that. But you're right. The receiver position overall needs to be better on Saturday. The weather, you know, it figures to be in the 50s. Looks like it's going to be sunny. Wind does not appear to be a factor, so it should be a pretty ideal day for whoever the quarterback is. Hopefully it's Sudfeld. Right now, I would speculate that the quarterback depth chart is going to be Sudfeld, Danny Cameron, and then Nate Boudreau is kind of the emergency guy. But if not, then Cameron's going to get the start. Whoever it is, the receivers have to step up and allow for this IU offense to sling it around, because I think they should be able to have success against Rutgers. One thing that I looked at with Rutgers defense, I know that Washington State is a bit of an anomaly because of that Mike Leach air raid, but Rutgers gave up 559 yards to Washington State. They gave up 471 to Penn State, and that's before Penn State really opened up their offense at all. That was mainly just Penn State doing whatever they wanted. Kansas has one of the worst offenses in the entire country. They got 342 yards, and then last week Michigan State had nearly 500. They had 489. And Michigan State does have a good offense, but 489 is a lot to give up to them. So they're surrendering almost 25 points a game. That's not terrible. It's right in the middle at 61st, but the S&P Plus rankings have them as the 109th ranked defense. And a lot of that is because they do bring pressure, but they don't hit home. Kamoko Touré leads them in sacks, and he's got two. So, this is a team that Indiana should be able to move the ball against if that offense can get healthy. And really, I think that they should see some success, even if Danny Cameron is the quarterback, because I think Cameron is good enough and the skill position players are good enough to at least score some points. But definitely having Sudfeld's going to be a key. So the IU offense, number one, needs to get healthy literally, and number two, needs to get healthy in terms of feeling good about themselves, getting on track again after a rough week at Penn State. One of the keys that I had, I guess at some point we have to talk about Leonte Carew and how Indiana's going to defend him. Carew, on his career, he's got 25 touchdown catches, 97 catches overall. This season, it's been a bit rocky for him, to say the least. He was suspended for the first half of their game against Norfolk State, came in the second half, caught three passes, all three were touchdowns, 129 yards. So that's a pretty good half. Washington State held him to check for only 52 yards, and he was really frustrated after that game. It was evident on the sidelines late that he was kind of throwing a hissy fit about not getting the ball much. And then he was indefinitely suspended following an incident after that game outside the stadium. Something occurred. We're not entirely sure what all happened. The accusations and the allegations were that he slammed a woman to the concrete. He was going to be facing trial for charges of battery. The charges were dismissed, and he was reinstated to the team. So he missed the games against Penn State and Kansas. Last week, played against Michigan State, three touchdowns, 134 yards. So when he has played, he has been very productive in two of the three games. Geary had 125 yards and two scores. So he did have success against IU secondary last year. Totally different group this year, but I think Rashard Fant is going to be the guy. Brian Knorr hinted that Fant would have to have a really good week against Carew. I would expect you'd see safety help, so either Dutra or Crawford would kind of be shading towards Carew, constantly giving Fant some help with double coverage, which means that other guys are going to be in single coverage situations. So really the entire secondary needs to have a good game, because if you are shading coverage to double up somebody, obviously the guys that are in single coverage need to do their job exceptionally well, because they won't have any help over the top. I think Jonathan Crawford might be a guy, just because of his size and athleticism, that you look at shading towards him. There can't be any busted coverages at all against Carew, because if you do, it's 6 points.
Yeah, and I think you said this is in, what, two and a half games, he has six touchdowns. So the guy's a playmaker. And he definitely changes their dynamic of that offense. And we'll see. You know, he had five catches last year for 125 yards against IU. They know what he could do, and they're going to have to bear down. And the best way to do it is to put Fant on him and then get pressure on Laviano so those routes don't develop. Also, what would help is if, you know, IU's offense could get going.
Yeah.
And in terms of depth chart, TJ, you know, some people take it as gospel, but the one that was released yesterday is Xander Diamant as the backup quarterback. He's probably going to miss 2 weeks. So this is why when I tweet it out, it's for what it's worth. Make of it what you will. It's basically toilet paper to some people, and other people, like to break it down like it's gospel. So we'll see. Yep. They need Nate Sudfeld. They need Jordan Howard. I think they need Sudfeld more than Howard. They could survive without Howard, I believe. It's a big game. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You need this one. The players know they need this one. The coaching staff knows they need this one. Hopefully the fans know they need to get this one and turn out in full force.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, one final key for me, because it jumps out at you when you look at it, the turnover battle is one that Indiana's got to be hoping that they're able to exploit on Saturday. IU plus 9 on the season, that's good for fifth in the country. Rutgers minus 6. So you've got a difference there of, and they've only played 5 games. They did not have any against Michigan State, but 3 against Kansas, 3 against Penn State, 3 against Washington State. The turnovers against Washington State are the only reason they lost that game. You got to hope that if this one's close, those turnovers, Indiana's able to keep taking care of the ball on offense, which is impressive because they really shouldn't have had one last week. It wasn't Danny Cameron's fault that ball got picked off. But 3 different quarterbacks, and all 3, I think, have done a nice job of taking care of the ball for Indiana. Whoever's been running the ball hasn't fumbled very often at all. So, and the defense has done a good job of not just getting close to making plays, but actually doing it and making those plays, whether it's interceptions or fumble recoveries. Call it opportunistic, call it lucky, whatever you want. I think through this point of the season, you have to say that turnovers are something that Indiana is excelling at, something that Rutgers is struggling at. Let's hope that continues on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. And it's beyond lucky now. They've done it for 6 games this year. The last 3 games last year, they did it well. So it's more of a pattern than being lucky, although some people might say it's still lucky. With turnovers, but we'll see where they go from here. They got to get something going in the kick return game. IU, that is. Rutgers, I think we alluded to on Monday, gets their kickoff, their touchback percentage is around 21-22%. So maybe we'll see a little move on kickoff return and see a personnel change. But who knows? It's something that they're probably going to play close to the vest because it is such a big game. And, we'll see from there.
Yeah, something has to be generated positively because the opportunities are going to be there to return those kicks. Like we have mentioned on Monday, we'd like to see someone get another try there. There aren't a ton of great options, but I think we both agree that Mitchell Page might be the first guy we'd like to see give it a shot on Saturday to try and create at least some type of, number one, you can create momentum, and number two, you can create advantageous field position. So something needs to happen back there at kick return, because it appears that Rutgers doesn't do near as good a job as Indiana does as putting that ball in the end zone on kickoffs.
Yeah, and when we talk to Matt, we'll ask a little bit more about the importance of this game. But let's take a quick trip around the conference. It's a day that's going to be highlighted by Michigan State up in Ann Arbor. Game day is heading there. What do you see from that game, TJ?
Well, it's a huge rivalry. It's not quite as big for Michigan fans as Michigan Ohio State is, but it's still a very big rivalry. Michigan State certainly has had the upper hand in recent years. They've won 6 of 7, but I really think Michigan's going to clobber them. I think we're at the point where Michigan State isn't just, quote, figuring things out or just taking it easy until they get to tougher opponents or whatever the excuses have been in previous weeks. You know, you look at their marquee win against Oregon. That looked awesome at the time. Well, Oregon has lost 3 games now. You know, they're 500. Michigan State has 1 win against the team with the winning record, and that was Air Force, and they're 3-2. They've been outgained in 3 of their 6 games. Calls against Purdue, close calls against Rutgers. I think the Michigan State is a pretty good team. I think that they deserve to be ranked, but I do not think that they are anywhere close to the elite outfit that people thought they were going to be. Michigan, on the other hand, is destroying people since that loss to Utah, which, you know, Utah now is ranked 5th in the country, so losing at Utah by 7 is nothing to feel bad about. You know, they drilled Oregon State, they beat UNLV, they shut out their past 3 opponents. They returned the opening kickoff against Northwestern, and that was it. That game was over. They didn't need anything else. They got a bunch more. I mean, they beat them 38-0, but this defense is operating at a historic level right now, and the offense is getting better. They're running the ball well. I think Devion Smith is expected to be back to 100% on Saturday, or at least as close as you can get as a football player in the middle of the season. So I think he'll carry the load for him on offense. Rudock is not turning the ball over like he was at the start of the year. He's still not at all explosive, but he's not turned the ball over, which is what they're asking from him. The good running backs with Smith, Ty Isaac, Drake Johnson. I mean, it's just a really, really good football team that Michigan has assembled. And I unfortunately, Jim Harbaugh appears to be rolling very early in his tenure. And I expect that to continue on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. That'll be a game that I'll watch again later just because it's at the same time. Next up, yeah. The second headliner is Penn State at Ohio State. Both teams are undefeated, and it's usually a good rivalry game between the two of them. What do you see with them there?
Undefeated in the Big Ten East. Penn State had the opening week loss to Temple. Since then, they have they rallied off 5 straight home victories, so that's good. This is the first time they're going on the road since they lost Temple. I think their offensive line has improved some since that opening loss, but it still is a concern for them going up against Ohio State's defense. Ohio State, they're favored by, I think it's like 17 or 18. I haven't checked on the most recent line, but I think it's going to be kind of hard for them to blow Penn State out because it is elite. I know that IU was shorthanded on offense, but Penn State has a very solid defense, and they're getting a couple of more guys back. I think Saquon Barkley is expected to play for them on Saturday at running back. So this is going to be an opportunity. Penn State played them very tight last year in Happy Valley. I think you'd have to obviously expect Ohio State to continue their Big Ten winning streak, but I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, nothing this year has been a walk in the park for the Buckeyes, really. Next up, we're going to go to the Heartbreak Kids of Nebraska. They're going to Minnesota, put a hurting on Purdue last week. Does Nebraska finally, you know, they have 4 losses in the last minute this year. Are they snake bit, or are they going to pull a rabbit out of their hat here?
Well, if you're a Nebraska fan, you've got to wonder how much emotionally the players have left. Some people think that, you know, that doesn't matter. They just forget about it, play the next week. I don't see any way that's possible. They've got to have some emotional scar tissue from all these close losses. I mean, They're 2-4 for the first time since the 1950s, and some of the Nebraska like fan sites that I've read, they're not pleased at all with the late game management from the coaching staff. I thought that they got incredibly conservative on their last drive. They had the ball under 2 minutes to go, a chance to kill the clock against Wisconsin. All they needed was one first down. They just ran it up the gut three times, to which hadn't worked all game. They handed it off to Monty Cross, who hadn't really gotten anything going all game. When you have mobile Tommy Armstrong, you could have rolled him out, and I think he probably gets the first down pretty easily. But I am not a coach, and I am definitely not as smart as those guys. But Minnesota might have rediscovered their identity last week. They spent all offseason trying to balance their offense by working on the passing game. It never took. Being a physical running team is the identity of Minnesota football. It's what they should be doing. And they just pounded Purdue last week, 326 rushing yards. Shannon Brooks is a freshman that really looked great, had over 170 on the ground. So I really have no clue what to expect from this. Is Minnesota going to be the offense we saw against Purdue, or was that just them running over a hapless Boilermaker defense that has thrown in the towel? I don't know, but I would expect another close game, because that seems to be all Nebraska plays.
Yeah, definitely. And next we'll go to Purdue and Wisconsin. Purdue is coming off it's not a gut-wrenching loss as it's close. It was a gut-wrenching loss because it was so bad. I believe the final was 48-13 against a team that had been shut out last week. It was at home. And whispers are starting about Hazel's job security, or getting louder, not starting. They've been started for a while. Does Purdue have a shot this week, or is Wisconsin going to run roughshod over them up at Camp Randall?
Well, yeah, I think Purdue has a shot just because Wisconsin has really been operating with a thin margin for error. They've done a good job of finding ways to win, but this is not a vintage Badgers team. They don't run the ball very well. They've got some injuries. They're running back. The offensive line is too young and inexperienced to really dominate and impose their will the way that we've seen Wisconsin teams of the past decade do. But they do have a very good defense, which seems to be a theme with about half these Big Ten teams. Defense is kind of carrying the day in the conference at some places, not all, as we are well aware. But you know, Purdue, gosh, you kind of have to be wondering what exactly the future of the program is. I mean, you've won two games against FBS opponents within Darryl Hazel's tenure. You have one Big Ten victory. That was against Illinois. The last week you just get completely obliterated by an offensively inept squad. At least we thought they were offensively inept. Maybe they're not, or maybe it's just your defense. You have to wonder what exactly that coaching staff is doing to improve the players that they bring in, because so far it's looking like they're not really adding any value to the program. They're just collecting a paycheck. I'm sure they're working hard, but their hard work doesn't appear to be paying off. And I'd be fairly surprised if they make a move, only because it does not appear that the administration is really committed to having a successful athletics program right now. Their fans, they appear to be kind of apathetic about the situation with the football team, downright angry about Morgan Burke, their athletic director, and what they feel is kind of a negligence of the overall athletic department. So things are not great in West Lafayette. I don't feel bad for them at all. I'm glad that they stink, and I hope it continues.
I just feel bad because, you know, people deserve an athletic department who cares. I don't care that they don't stink. It's whatever, that's on them. Make the right hire. But I do feel bad that their athletic department is basically said, we don't care anymore. And it's sad to see, because Purdue has a great history in football, and they could really be one of those teams who makes a run every couple of years at 7, 8, or 9 wins, and maybe once a decade makes a run at that Big Ten East or a Big Ten Championship.
In that division, there's no excuse. Yeah, that division, there's no excuse not to be competitive. There's just not. I mean, there are not – you don't have traditional powers in that division. You have good teams, and that the Big Ten West is a lot better and more competitive than I thought it was. But I mean, you just look last week, Northwestern, which a lot of people thought, oh look, it's a really good team in the Big Ten West, and maybe they are, but they played what a lot of people thought was the third best team in the Big Ten East, which it appears Michigan is not the third best team. They're better than that, but you look at kind of those teams that are sort of in that same position from each division, and it wasn't even a contest. And that, you could look long-term for the future of the programs, and you would say it wouldn't be a contest in 5 years either. So it's really there's no excuse to be totally inept in that Big Ten West. You can't do it. And I feel for the fans that have to feel like there's no hope because they're not seeing any commitment to make improvements. It was the worst athletics-wise. It was the worst year for Purdue last season overall with their athletic department, all their sports combined. And their athletic director got a raise. So, you have to feel like what exactly is his job title if he's getting a raise when they're historically as bad as they've ever been. So, it's a tough situation. They've like you said, it's a traditional, at the very worst, they should be decent. They should put a decent product onto the field based on their history, and they're not doing that now, and they haven't for the past decade. So I'm sure that they have to be really frustrated about that. My only hope is that they continue to play like this for the rest of the year so that IU can get that third straight bucket.
Yeah. winning there three times hasn't happened since the mid-40s. Next game we're going to, final game on the Big Ten slate, is number 17, Iowa at Northwestern. It's a big game for the Big Ten West. Iowa's going to be without Drew Ott the rest of the year. He's out with torn ACL. It was suffered in practice. Northwestern coming off as shellacking at Michigan. So we'll see how they rebound. What are some things to watch here, TJ?
It's a really interesting one. I was just talking about the Big Ten West and Northwestern. If they can win this week at home, they're right back in, one of those driver's seats. There are multiple driver's seats because it's still early in the season, but a loss here for them at home would move them to 1-2 in the Big Ten and would probably ruin hopes that they had a couple weeks ago of being the West representative in Indianapolis at the end of the year. They're Iowa 6-0. They're 2-0 in the Big Ten. They got a huge win at Wisconsin in week one of Big Ten play. And then last week were able to do enough to get by Illinois. I'm not entirely sure what to expect because Northwestern was, one team for the first 5 weeks of the season and then really just got obliterated in every phase of the game by Michigan. I do think Michigan is really, really good. It was a disheartening performance from Northwestern. You expected them to at least be competitive there. So I'm not entirely sure what to expect here. Iowa, like you said, losing Drew Ott, that definitely hurts their defense, which has been a good unit for them so far, especially the secondary. Desmond King, one of the best ball hawks in the nation so far this year, with quite a few interceptions. Northwestern's defense, still a top 10 unit nationally. They're going to have to play like it because it doesn't look like Clayton Thorson is going to be able to win them any games with his at this young point in his career. They're going to need to rely on Justin Jackson to have a good day on the ground, and they're going to have to lock up Iowa's offense, which has been, like we've said most of the season, it's been a pleasant surprise to see them kind of open things up. And they've got Jordan Canfieri, a good running back. C.J. Beathard has been a above-average quarterback. Pretty good.
I heard Beathard might be out as well. It might have been something I just scrolled over Twitter real quickly last night. But I heard that he's questionable for the game.
Okay. That that would certainly put the onus on Northwestern to get that done. That would move them back to 2-1. It would move Iowa down to 2-1. Really, it boils down to this: a victory for Iowa means that they are the definite favorite to win the West the rest of the way. This would be wins at Wisconsin and at Northwestern for them. A loss really opens the door back up for Northwestern. Iowa would still be in it. It would open the door for Wisconsin, I guess, would still be in it, and Minnesota would still be in it as well. So it would really jumble everything up with an Iowa loss. But that's a big one. Quite a few very interesting games in the Big Ten on Saturday, so it should be a fun weekend.
Yeah, it should be, and the weather should be great. We're waiting on Matt Weaver to call in and speak more about the size and the importance of this game on Saturday. TJ, you'll be down in Bloomington. You do your game primer every week. What are some of the homecoming activities that people should, you know, go see?
Sure, yeah. Like you said, it's homecoming, so there's the traditional, you know, Friday night festivities. Parade and pep rally begin at 5:30 on Kirkwood. As a part of homecoming weekend, the varsity club is going to have varsity club day, so they'll have a bunch of activities around on Saturday. The I Association is going to recognize former IU athletes who earned their varsity letter, their first varsity letter, 50 years ago this year. And then I think it'll be really cool to have the 1945 football team honored during Saturday's game. 75 years ago, the 1945 Indiana Hoosiers, led by George Taliaferro, one of the best players in program history, they went undefeated, were Big Ten champions. That team is going to be honored. And I kind of think that IU might wear the black eye helmets to kind of nod to that homage, pay homage to the 45 Hoosiers. We have no idea, but they're also going to have Indianapolis Colts College tailgate tour. I don't know what that is, but it's going to be in the East Concourse. I imagine Colts will hand out a bunch of horseshoe stuff. And then some band called Sheila Steven and the Rodeo Monkeys are going to be playing at the Hoosier Village. I have no idea what kind of music that is, but that is a great name for a band, the Rodeo Monkeys.
All right. Well, Matt Weaver has called in, TJ. Matt, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing okay. I think I caught whatever that guy at Penn State had sitting behind us and sneezing all over us. So things could be better, but
the human petri dish?
Yep,
the human petri dish.
Yeah.
One more reason to dislike Penn State.
Yes. In that tiny, you know, small press box that made me feel like I was sitting at the kids' table. But, Matt, this is a huge game for IU. What is the importance of this game going forward?
Well, I mean, you hate to say it's the biggest game of, you know, Kevin Wilson's time or the biggest game of the season, but I kind of think it is. I mean, you got a tough game after this at Michigan State, and then you got the bye week, and then you've got Iowa and Michigan at home, and then a couple of road games, Maryland and Purdue. This game's huge. I think they have to win this. I think this is an absolute must-win. It's homecoming. It's against a team that you should be able to compete with, and it's a winnable game. And I think it's a must-win for this program.
What do they need? What does IU need to do to win this game? We mentioned that they needed to stop the run and limit Carew, but what else do they need to do?
The first thing is they need to get healthy. They need Nate Sudfeld back, and they need Jordan Howard back. To me, Nate Sudfeld would be a little bit higher on the pecking order than Jordan Howard. Not to take anything away from Jordan Howard, he's fantastic, but I think the drop-off from Sudfeld to his backup is way bigger than from Howard to his backup. I think you can win with Nate Sudfeld at quarterback and Devine Reddy at running back. I don't think you can win with Danny Cameron at quarterback and Jordan Howard at running back. So they, in my opinion, they need to get Nate Sudfeld back. Offensively, they need to get the run game going. Whoever's back there, the offensive line needs to play better. And some of that would be helped if Nate Sudfeld's the quarterback, because that changes what the defense is going to do. And then defensively, you can't let Carew beat you. Somebody else is going to be – if they beat you, it's got to be somebody else. You can't go off for, like, you know, 8, 10 catches and 150 yards and 3 or 4 touchdowns. You know, you got to get them in third and long and then hope your pass rush can get after their quarterback.
Right. Speaking of Sudfeld, has there been any word? I know that the depth chart came out yesterday and it had Xander listed as number two, which we know that's not going to happen. Is this going to be a game time decision like it was last week?
Something tells me, and this is just my gut feel, something tells me that they'll know beforehand. If I had to bet, I think he'll play. You know, we watched him before the game last week, and I don't think he was moving, obviously, 100%, but I thought he was moving okay. His throws looked pretty crisp, and he's had another week to kind of heal up and rehab and all that stuff. So, Rutgers, not taking anything away from Rutgers, but they're not Penn State defensively. I don't think you have to worry as much about him trying to get away from pass rushers and things like that. You know, I think if you can set up a game plan where he gets the ball out quick, you don't have to have him in the pocket or, you know, put him in situations where he would have to move around and maybe aggravate that ankle. I think they could do that this week. So, you know, my guess is we may not find out until before game time, but I would think they kind of have an idea, you know, going in that whether he can play or not.
At what point do you think that they don't play him? If he's 75%, does he play? Or if he's 60%, does he not play? How much of a chance are you, or how much are they going to chance this and roll the dice here?
Well, I think it's – I don't know if it's a percentage. I think it's basically an eyeball test. I think, you know, Coach Wilson and Coach Johns will watch him, and if they feel like he can run the offense, he can make the throws that they need him to make, and he can move it – you know, he can move around enough where he's not a liability or where, it's just basically going to really – you know, if he's to the point where he can't move at all, like he can't go laterally to avoid a rusher or to step up in the pocket, then that may be a case where you don't play him. But I think if they feel like he can move a little bit, and I thought he was moving okay, like I said before, Penn State, not great. I mean, you could tell there was still some discomfort there, but I didn't think it was as bad as during the Ohio State game. So hopefully another week will get him better. But I think it's all going to be about can he protect himself in the pocket and can he make the throws that he needs to make?
Right. Outside of the injuries, was there anything really concerning about the Penn State performance that Hoosier fans should be worried about, or is it, you know, you're missing your top two players and really you can't compete without those two guys?
Well, I guess to me that's kind of the concerning part. I mean, it's, you know, obviously going forward you want to get these guys back, but it's something that's got to be addressed. It's, you know, if you get them back and they don't get hurt the rest of the year, it's not a big of a deal, but, you know, it's something that needs to be addressed going forward because there's obviously a significant drop-off to a couple positions to the backups to the point where it's even hard to compete. Penn State is a solid team, but that was a game that Indiana should have been able to stay in. Now, obviously, without Howard and Sudfeld, it made it hard, but, you know, it's kind of concerning that there's such a huge drop-off to your number two quarterback and kind of to your number two running back, and then you're kind of thin at both spots. You know, other than that, I thought the defense played solid. I mean, they gave up some big plays, but they're on the field a lot. You know, I think there was I think we were talking on the way home, there's like 12 drives where Indiana didn't go more than 17 yards on offense. I mean, you just can't do that to your defense. There's just no way you can put a defense out there that much and expect them to continually make stops. But I thought they played okay. You know, offensively, getting the guys back will make a big difference, in my opinion. You know, the offensive line needs to kind of you know, buckle down and play better this week.
Yeah, that was my concerning point from Penn State, was the offensive line kind of got beat up. Now they're going against great competition in Ohio State and Penn State, that the offensive line kind of got beat up by those two guys, two defenses, and Rutgers really doesn't sport that kind of talent on the defensive line. What's your feeling, Matt? You were down in Bloomington yesterday. What was your feeling around the team? I got the feeling that they have a little bit more sense of urgency. Did that come across to you as well?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to a couple of guys. I mean, the guys who came in, you know, they seemed pretty upbeat. They seemed confident. You know, they seemed focused. I talked to Rashard Fant. I talked to Coach Larry McDaniel, the D-line coach, I think they understand that this is a big – every game's a big game. I'm not trying to say one game is more, but when, you know, you've lost two in a row and you got a game at home against a team that's you know, you can compete with and that's very winnable if you play well, you know, it's – you got, there should be a sense of urgency, and I get the sense that there is. You know, I think they'll come out and I think they'll play well on Saturday. I hope that they're – you know, they're playing pretty much with a full deck instead of missing a couple guys. But I think they're going to come out, and I think they're going to play well and put on a good show.
All right. Matt, thanks for joining us. TJ, you have any questions?
Yeah. One thing, if we're talking about must wins for the kind of the future of the program, which that we're not hinting that, oh, if they lose this game, Kevin Wilson's going to be fired. We're definitely not saying that. But let's say, hypothetically, things kind of go off the rails here. Maybe the injuries stick around, and they're unable to get to that 6 wins after the 4-0 start. You know, a lot of Big Ten teams are looking at making coaching changes. We know Maryland is. It's possible that Illinois is going to not go with Cubitt. Purdue might end up making a change. Rutgers might end up making a change. So when you have all these programs around you that are kind of a similar stature that are making coaching changes, do you think the administration will look at that and say, you know, we're not entirely sure about Kevin Wilson based on what has happened this year, but we're going to opt with stability when everybody else is going to rebuild? Do you think that's something they'll look at, or is it we can only focus on our program and not look at what the rest of the conference is doing?
Well, I think you always have to take a view of the landscape. But my opinion is you're either 100% behind your coach or you're not. And if you're not 100% behind your coach, and if you're not sure, then maybe you need to make a change. I mean, that's kind of my viewpoint. I mean, I don't know if there's a number as far as many wins. I've always thought that they needed to get a bowl game this year. And if they went 1-7 or, you know, God forbid, 0-8 after a 4-0 start, that's – it's going to be tough to sell. If you bring him back, you have to extend him. I mean, I don't know how you can't. Him on a 2-year contract is a lame duck coach, and recruiting will absolutely be dead in the water. You will not get anybody recruiting-wise that's any good. You just won't. You'll be MAC-level players, and that's not going to work. So if you bring him back, can you sell a coach who's not going to a bowl game in 5 years and has basically won like less than 20 games in 5 years? Can sell him as a give him an extension. I don't know. That's what Indiana has to decide. But it wouldn't be a great year to make a coaching change. But if you're not behind him, then that's what you should do.
Yeah, it's a good point. And then has any of the recruits that you've been in contact with? We know you can't get specific on any of that stuff, but has the kind of the outlook on this season? Nobody's pulled the trigger or anything, but has the outlook from those guys' point of view, how are they looking at kind of this 4-2 start that for the most part has been pretty positive? How are the recruits that appear to be waiting on the rest of the season to commit to Indiana, how are they looking at things?
I think they've been impressed with the start. I mean, obviously the last 2 weeks have been tough, but it's not like, you know, they were obviously not playing terrible competition. Ohio State's number one in the country, and Penn State's, you know, pretty solid. I think that there are recruits that are waiting to see how they do, how they finish up the season. If they get to 6-7 wins, I think there'll be some guys they might be able to pull in. Maybe you might be able to flip a recruit or two, or guys who are committed elsewhere. So I think it's still kind of a wait and see. And I think the guys who are committed are still fully on board. I have no reason to believe they're not. And I think there's guys that they're after that are close to pulling the trigger, as long as, you know, the season keeps going pretty well.
Great. Yeah, tremendous. Thanks a lot, Matt. We really appreciate having you on. It's always great. We'll have to do it again.
Okay, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, Matt. We'll see you on Saturday.
Okay, take care.
Thanks. All right, that was Matt Weaver from Pegs.com. He's our frequent guest of the show, friend of the show, friend of the site. TJ, no bars held. It is a big game. The future is not wholly dependent on it. He's not going to get fired if he loses this game. But all your momentum from that first four games are probably going to be wiped out if you lose this one. So it's a big game. We'll both be down there, including Nick as well. So keep coming back to Hoosier Huddle for all your content. TJ's game primer should be out later today, TJ?
Yeah, it'll be up this afternoon, scheduled to launch at 2 o'clock.
All right, so we'll have this game primer up. TJ, as always, a pleasure talking Big Ten football with you, and we'll see you on Saturday.
Absolutely. Have a good rest of the week, guys. Thanks for listening, and go Hoosiers.
And that's going to do it for our pregame show of Indiana versus Rutgers. It's homecoming. Enjoy the festivities. The weather should be fantastic for football, maybe a little on the chilly side, but that is football weather. So bring a sweatshirt to the game. Enjoy. Get some tailgating in. See the homecoming parade if you can. If not, follow along with us on Twitter. It's at Hoosier_Huddle. Of course, it's HoosierHuddle.com. And enjoy the rest of your week.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.